Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
Welcome back for the Week 5 edition of the Denver Broncos podcast. Hopefully all the technical difficulties are behind us. I'm Andrew Mason, and with me as always to start the show, Andy Lindahl of 760 and KOA AM 850 and 94.1 FM. I think I got it all right.
To be honest, I am your technical difficulty, right? it's my loud, booming voice that must be heard for blocks and miles.
It's that radio voice. What I need to do is, if I talked from like my kidneys or my liver, I don't think I could get that deep.
And you should have heard me get upset coaching. This is nothing. I can get louder if you can believe it.
I believe it. I've heard you louder. I've seen you after a couple of drinks. I know you can get louder.
That's right. When was that? That was like every road trip last year until it got cold.
Yeah, exactly.
Then we quit.
Which is interesting because usually people tend to drink more once it gets colder.
Yeah, but we had to walk. I'm not a fan. Like, I hate the Uber, right?
Yeah.
We did an Uber in Tampa where the guy, we got in the car. Mm-hmm. He took us to Charlie's, nice steakhouse, and I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yes, I am.
But then he told us I couldn't even remember. It was like the Cyborg District. That wasn't it, but we were calling it the Cyborg District.
Anyway, Ybor.
Yeah, two people got stabbed there that night. So we were like, yeah, thank you for the thanks for the recommendation.
And that's one of my nightlife recommendations is Ybor.
Really?
So, yes.
Where they got stabbed?
Come well, on, not Andrew. Exactly.
You trying to get me hurt?
It was a couple of blocks away. You got to stick to the main. You got to stick to the main drag.
So it's like, what is that? New Orleans? Where will we go? In the French Quarter? Don't get off the main strip.
Bourbon Street. Yeah. I mean, the worst that'll happen to you on Bourbon Street is someone's going to pick your pocket.
On Bourbon Street?
Yeah. So my advice to you is keep
the
your...
The best that could happen to you off Bourbon Street, I'm told, is someone will pick your pocket. Because much worse is in store for you if the wrong people show up.
Yeah. Bourbon Street's a place where I keep my wallet in my front pocket, not the back pocket.
You should do that anyway. I got a Costanza wallet. I can't... If I were to sit on this, I'd have those back problems that George had.
But you'd have back problems, but then how do you sit comfortably if you've got your Costanza wallet more cow here than on a burger in your front pocket?
It's right here. I'm fine.
Oh man,
don't be afraid of change, Andrew Mason.
I fear change in some ways. Actually, it's not that I fear change. I just get into habits.
I don't know what to tell you. I was going to say, are you going to be, I understand you're into habits. Did you, what was your habit on, there was something you were going to do in Tampa. Did you go see the pops and mom? Who'd you go
I
see?
Did.
Did you see the parents?
Saw the parents. Saw my brother and his wife and their two kids drove over from Brevard County. And if you've heard of Brevard County in the last 24 hours, that is because it is the bullseye of the cone for Hurricane Matthew coming up the east coast of Florida.
So it really changed course, because when we were there, as of the morning of the game, they were telling everybody, hey, this is going to miss us, we should be okay.
They were thinking Carolinas more than Florida. And then it's changed course since then, and now it's supposed to hug the east coast of the state all the way up to Jacksonville. Jacksonville's under a hurricane warning as we record this, and Jacksonville really hasn't had a direct hit from a hurricane in decades. So, you know, thoughts to everyone down in Florida, including my brother and his family. They're actually going to ride it out at their home because they're inland, but they're expecting a lot of wind. So, yeah, what you saw if you watched Broncos Bucks on Sunday with that storm rolling through is only just a slight taste of what most of Florida has in store for itself this weekend.
Yeah, that's the precursor to the kind of rain they're going to get. I've got to ask you before we talk serious stuff on the Falcons. What should they do in Tampa about these start times? I was talking to a lot of the people on the sidelines, the security guys, the PR people, whatever.
Yeah.
And I said, is this normal? And they said, here's the problem. They appreciate the Bucks' thought of getting the fans out of the sun in the midday. Because obviously from what we experienced in the first half, that is suffocating in itself.
And the fans have made that clear to the Bucks for many, many years, going back to the 1980s, that they would prefer late kickoffs in the early season for that reason.
The problem, as I'm being told, is one lady said this used to end about August, early September. She said now these suffocating temperatures like we see here, as they used to call it Indian summer here, now it extends into late October to where it's hot and muggy like that. And the other problem is that everybody tells me, and I think you were one of them, you get the evening rainstorm, which is going to lead to these delays. And you mm-hmm. know the NFL, look, I don't know that the Broncos were too excited to think about staying there much longer than they did to try to play that game. So I don't think any other team, NFL team, is going to feel the same. How do you find the perfect scenario for this?
Yeah. Short of adding night games, of, I mean, what do? You say, okay, you guys can play on Monday Night Football at 8:30, but you've only got a regional audience. Short of adding night games, I don't think there's a solution to it. I think it's going to be where they just go back and say, you're playing at 1 o'clock on Sunday like they used to. They used to have a lot more 1 o'clock early season games. And then it was, well, sometimes we'll get it in, sometimes we'll squeeze it in, sometimes we can't. But this year, their first two home games were at in that late window. And both teams that were delayed had long trips home.
The Broncos, LA and one in Denver.
Yep, and the Broncos, it was exacerbated by a mechanical delay on the plane. I didn't get back to my house and fall asleep until 2:33 in the morning.
Same here.
So, yeah. It's something that they're going to have an earnest discussion about, because two delays in 2 weeks and a clearly changing weather pattern. I used to live down there. It's the same thing. I mean, it used to be that sometime between late August and about September 10th, the pattern stopped. It was dry, you know, relatively dry from that point forward. It's not happening. One team that doesn't have to worry about weather delays in its home is the Atlanta Falcons. They've played in the Georgia Dome since 1992. They're moving into Mercedes-Benz Stadium with its retractable roof next year. But this year, the Falcons coming into Denver, and they're flying high, 3-1. Best offense in the league right now, a balanced offense with a lot of weapons. Seems like we talk about this with the Broncos a lot. Their elite defense getting yet another challenge from an offense that's blessed with talent.
Yeah, I will say this, though. I guess it's hard for me to take the NFC Southern Division teams seriously.
Why?
Because outside of Carolina, I don't think you've challenged each other very much. You've got New Orleans sitting down there that doesn't play any defense ever. And some of these numbers that the Falcons are riding high on comes against a New Orleans defense that, frankly, if the Broncos don't put a lot up, I'm going to be disappointed.
And against Oakland.
And against Oakland.
And against Carolina, which
and Carolina's
was finally exposed, I think, on defense. Not keeping Josh Norman, going with youth at cornerback. I think it finally caught up to them, because there were times that if you watch the film, they've got their corners at the line of scrimmage and you think they're going to juke the receiver, and instead they just let Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu by. Next thing you know, it's 20 yards and the Falcons are roaring up the field. So I think the Broncos defense is going to be something unlike anything this Falcons offense has faced. It's got talent. I think it can cause some problems, but I also think this on paper should be the Falcons' worst offensive day so far this season.
See, I would agree with you, and I don't get me wrong. I respect with what Kyle Shanahan is doing out there. I respect mm-hmm. the numbers that they put up, because they still put them up. You can only play the games on your schedule, as Bill Parcells or whoever said.
And they're running a scheme very similar to that of the Broncos, so it shows you what this offense can do when it's in the right situation and the right matchups.
Let me ask you this, though. I think it's never a good plan just to finish off on our defense. I think it's never a good plan mm-hmm. to rely on your offense to come to Denver in the crowd noise with this defense. I don't think it ends well for you. They've got to keep Tlaib, which I'm expecting will still be the case Sunday, and then we'll visit next week as to what, mm-hmm. if anything, happens with the NFL and the situation in Dallas.
Right.
But right now I'm expecting he's on the field. He's your big receiver specialist. He's not going to let Julio have the free runs you just described. We know that. He's going to get physical with him. Chris Harris can handle whatever opposite you need. They've got and again, they're deep. They go deep into the secondary there. So I think it could spell trouble for Atlanta for an offensive standpoint. But I think Bronco fans need to be ready that this could be a defensive battle. I know, because on paper the Falcons' defense isn't impressive. And I think the Broncos' offense should have some success. But as you just laid out, Kyle Shanahan coached under Gary Kubiak in Houston. He coached with his dad in Washington, his dad being Mike Shanahan.
Yep.
This is a very incestuous situation, if you want to call it that way, as far as how all these systems come together. And I think a lot of things are going to look – I think the defenses are going to key in on a lot of stuff from both teams, and this could look like the Baltimore opener a couple years ago.
Exactly. I don't think it will be to that extreme, but both – Chris Harris Jr. and Brandon Marshall have told me in the locker room this week that, yeah, that they feel like they have an advantage over most teams because they know what a zone-blocking-based offense looks like from seeing it in practice every day. So they're not going to get caught flat-footed as often as you see because the plays look the same coming off the snap. And that's what causes confusion for a lot of defenses. I don't think it's going to be the case for these defenses. That being said, Atlanta's struggling to generate a consistent pass rush as they did last year. Dan Quinn doesn't have the weapons to do what he wants to do, what he did in Seattle. They're still growing. Their linebacker core has been besieged by an injury. Sean Weatherspoon is the latest to go out. So even though the Falcons are going to, because of the connections you mentioned, they're going to have an idea what's coming. The difference may well be the fact that the Broncos have elite personnel out there, and the Falcons, by and large, on defense, don't have as much of that.
I hate to sound like the cocky guys doing the broadcast on the team webpage, even though we are on the team webpage. But let's be honest about it. I know the team doesn't ever look ahead. I'm going to be surprised if the record is an 8-0 or 7-1 by the time we hit the midpoint of the season. I'll just tell you, this next four games to me is a much easier test than the first four games were. Now this is going to
This might actually be the toughest game so far, though, in terms of the quality of the team. Because Carolina is struggling. I mean, they came in as the defending champions, and I think they will put it together at some point. But right now, and even in week one, this is not the same team that went 17-1 going into Super Bowl.
But I think
50.
The Broncos had something to do with this crumbling.
Right.
Too.
Yeah. I do think that. I think the two toughest games to this point in the Broncos season are the one they're going to have Sunday and the Bengals game.
That's
and they
fair.
Did, yeah.
That's fair. I just think
both are playoff caliber teams.
I would say the Falcons are a playoff caliber team. The only thing that I caution here is that again, the win looked good last. I feel like the Broncos defense continues to play teams that look good the week before they play them, and then the Broncos don't allow them to look as good.
Certainly that was the case with Tampa Bay's offense going from 32 and yeah, there was a defensive touchdown, but 25 points against a very good Rams defense to 7 and nothing after the first quarter.
Well, let's look at the, don't forget about the Bengals either. The Bengals that got their first win of the year looked like, hey, this and don't forget what the Bengals did after Denver got out of there. Yeah. A.J. Green went off again against, who was it, the Dolphins
on Thursday night
game in the worst uniforms ever. Thank God that the Broncos have a natural color orange, and somehow they have a better orange alternate uniform than the Dolphins. I don't know why the Dolphins are wearing orange anyway, but that's beside the point. We'll talk about uniforms again another day. But
we'll talk about them next week.
Yeah, we will. Probably on Tuesday, right? We're going to have to do this a little earlier with game day coming. Mm-hmm. Look, my point is this. The Falcons are kind of the Panthers' Chiefs. The Chiefs are the team that always find a way currently to kind of bite the Broncos. They did it last year. Yep. They can ruin your good role. They can make you doubt yourself. The Falcons always do that to the Panthers. They did it to the Panthers last year.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to get too wrapped up in a divisional. You know what I mean? The divisional games, I think, they're always a different animal. You know each other too well. You scout each other all the time, and anything can happen in those games.
And that's why I know you talk about the, you know, being 7-1 or 8-0. You know, the Chargers, they're 1-3, but that's going to be tricky. And you've got them coming up right after this on a short week, and then they play them again at the end of the month. Division games, because of the familiarity, they're generally tighter. I mean, I would probably have to do some research to really kind of figure that out, but just my own observation of recent Broncos history is that the division games tend to cause some more problems, and the opponents of the Broncos during their 5-year division title streak have played, I wouldn't say played above their heads, just that they know what the Broncos are doing better than teams out that don't see them every year, and it shows. And Kansas City's won, and San Diego's caused some problems as well, even though it hasn't resulted in a Chargers win since late in 2013. Well, a lot of close games there.
And the Raiders have done their fair share, given our...
And they beat the Broncos in Denver last year.
Yep. Two of your four losses were home losses to divisional rivals. Mm-hmm. See, to your point about the Chargers, I always hate the Chargers because I think Philip Rivers scares you. He's the best quarterback to me still in the division right now, although Trevor's starting to challenge him, and so is Derek Carr. But still,
they've got to do it for years. That's the thing. Right. Philip Rivers has been playing at this level now for a decade.
And he loves, especially in Denver, shutting the crowd up. But that's
and they're
said,
not they're not 1-3 because of Philip Rivers.
No,
they're 1-3 because
of a defense that just lost its best corner
and a hard
offensive line
and a hard offensive line and skill players that last week couldn't hang on to the football.
Well, but here's my one thing. It just feels miserable in San Diego.
Yes.
It feels miserable. It feels like Mike McCoy, and I like him a lot, especially from his time here. He's waiting for the other shoe to drop, and I talked to some guys yesterday in San Diego on the radio. They're starting up the Philip Rivers trade rumors. So I think this is an interesting month to be playing the Chargers because mm-hmm. I think as much disarray as it felt like they were in last year with the seemed like an impending move, it's somehow they found a way to top it. And I don't know what is going on there, but you better get it figured out.
They've got to get it figured out. There's a vote next month in San Diego, of course, on a stadium proposal. But in spite of all that, they put a scare into the Broncos in week 17 last year when they had, I think it was 14 players on injured reserve. So even though you look at this month and you see home games against Atlanta, Houston and San Diego, Houston without J.J. Watt, and of course San Diego struggling. This is still a month that's filled with landmines, and the Broncos had best be careful. And the one thing I'll say about this game before we move on to our next segments, which include John Lynch of Fox Sports joining Ben Swanson, and of course our AFC West wrap and Get Off My Lawn and all the other segments you know and love. But the last time the Broncos lost at Pittsburgh last year, it was Antonio Brown going off. Now, as people have pointed out, look, the Broncos had safety injuries that day. They are healthy at safety this time. But still, it will be interesting to see what the Broncos do tactically against Julio Jones, because even though Aqib Talib is strong, sometimes even he needs a little help from the safety over the top against a guy like this.
I don't doubt that Julio gets some numbers. I just don't think it'll be enough to beat the Broncos.
Well, thanks a lot, Andy. We'll catch up with you next week. On the next segments, like I mentioned, John Lynch is joining us. Eric DeLisle has the AFC West wrap. The Fantasy Report with Ben Hunt and Chris Harey, and Caroline has all the good sound from the Broncos locker room this week. Stay tuned. Plenty more on the Broncos podcast.
Welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast, or as we like to call it around here, horsing around. Ben Hunt with Eric DeLisle. And Eric, it's that time of the week for the AFC West Roundup. So what do you got for us?
Well, a couple of close games this week, Ben. Good to be back talking about the AFC West, starting with the Oakland Raiders. They pulled out a 28-27 win on the road against Baltimore in what might be their most impressive win yet this season. You know, kind of a few wins before, then you have that loss. But I think a win against a 3-0 Baltimore Ravens team is pretty impressive. And the most encouraging thing that I saw is that, of course, Derek Carr has 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. That's great. But Michael Crabtree had 3 touchdowns. And if they can get another wide receiver to develop next to Amari Cooper, that's dangerous. Now, the one thing you don't like to see so much is they have that 21-12 lead with 11 minutes to go. They give it up, but they are able to go right back down the field, and the defense finally comes up with a big stop.
And since the start of the season, it seems like the Raiders have been playing in a lot more, you know, close games, maybe closer than they would like, but they've been scrappy and pulling out those wins. A lot of credit's been given to Derek Carr, of course. How do you think he's going to look in this matchup against the Chargers?
Yeah, he's been really impressive. I think a little bit underrated this year. Another 3 touchdown performance a couple weeks ago, had a 4-touchdown performance this week. He's been all that was advertised before the season. I think probably one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the league right now. And if they keep playing the way they're playing, it might scare Denver Broncos fans a little bit, because Broncos are 4-0, have been playing really well. Oakland Raiders have found ways to win, and they're sitting there 3-1. They're only a game back. So if you look at the Chargers, who continue to get beat up, they've lost Keenan Allen, they lost Danny Woodhead, Manti Te'o, now Jason Verrett. They just don't have that many guys left with a lot of talent, and so it could be a tough one for the Chargers this week.
And that's been something, the injury bugs crept up on the Chargers the past couple seasons, but the one thing that they've been able to rely on year after year is Philip Rivers.
Yeah, he's incredible, keeps going out there, putting up big performances. One thing you got to wonder is how much of a pulse does Mike McCoy still have on that team? They've lost 2 straight games that they probably should have pulled out. Against the Saints, they lost that 13-point lead in the final 5 minutes. there's got to be something there where you come together despite all these injuries and find ways to pull those games out, because that's the difference between a 6-10 season, an 8-8 season, or a 2-14 season.
Well, and Broncos fans know that well. I mean, all the games so far except for the last one against the Buccaneers have been close all last year. It seemed the Broncos were playing in these tight competitive games, and one or two possessions either way can really change the outcome of some of these games. And like you mentioned earlier, the Raiders definitely aware of that too with the way they've been playing this season. Also, we got the Chiefs on deck. What does it look like for the Chiefs up for the upcoming week?
Yeah, well, the Chiefs have a bye week coming up, and it's
I'm sure they would like to have that bye, right? So yeah, right on time.
The 43-14 drubbing they got from the Steelers. Steelers, I think, came in a bit angry. They lost to Philadelphia in a matchup that many people thought they would win. And Ben Roethlisberger was just unstoppable. 5 touchdowns, have Le'Veon Bell coming back, 8 yards a carry. He looks like he's in midseason form. That team, I think, is really, really good, and Kansas City just kind of ran into a buzzsaw.
Since I'm substituting for Andrew Mason today, I feel like I have to interject him into this part of the podcast. But like he said after that Chiefs-Steelers game, this is the one where Casey just needs to burn the tape and keep going.
Yep. Yeah, I think bye comes at a good time, kind of hit the reset button. Keep going. You got a game at Oakland after this bye week, and that's one you really got to win if you want to be in the hunt for the division and the wild card at the end of the year, because Oakland and Kansas City are going to be right there battling. If you want to be in that spot, that's one you got to kind of flush this game, get ready for that one.
All right, 2 AFC West games this week. Obviously, the Raiders versus the Chargers, and then the Broncos hosting the Falcons. Who do you got for those 2 games?
Yeah, I mean, I think Raiders, more talented team than the Chargers, and they've got them at home. I think that's a As you know, division games always close. Unexpected things can happen, but I do think the Raiders are focused enough. They know how to win at this point. I think they'll pull that one out. What do you think for that one?
Well, I'm going out on the limb. I think the Chargers, you know, I want to pick the upset with the Chargers, but that's not based on the performance of the Raiders, really. I think the Chargers, in a lot of their games early, they've been close. And again, I sometimes think getting into those divisional games gives the team a little extra juice, and you know, maybe you know the Bolts can get charged up and you know pull off a win versus the Raiders. So I'm going with the upset, but that's not indicative of what the Raiders have shown. I'm just going out there, you know, with the upset.
Yeah, and then as far as the Broncos and the Falcons go, I think everyone's talked a lot about this Falcons offense, and certainly talented from Devonta Freeman to Julio Jones to Matt Ryan. But they have
Julio Jones 300+ receiving yards in a game. It's just ridiculous.
Incredible. But they haven't played anybody as talented as the Broncos defense yet, as good with that scheme both in the front 7 and in the back end. I think the Broncos find a way to win it no matter who's playing at quarterback, whether it's Trevor Siemian or Paxton Lynch.
It'll be a great test, early test for the defense. I mean, we know the Broncos defense for the past 2 seasons has been lights out. But as Wade Phillips said earlier this week, yeah, he doesn't think that they've come across an offense this successful in a long time. So it'll be a good test there. I'm actually looking at the other side of the ball. I'm wondering how, you know, the Falcons defense is going to be able to play with an improved Broncos offense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one thing to watch is that Deion Jones, the Falcons rookie linebacker, who's played really well this year, he's out.
He's probably been their best player on the defensive side of the ball, arguably.
Yeah, and he's out. Their backup linebacker for Deion Jones is out, and they've got a third linebacker out as well. So they just signed A.J. Hawk, but they're really thin at that position. So it'll be interesting to see if C.J. Anderson, Devontae Booker can really pick it up and get the run game going, which whether you have a limited Siemian or Paxton Lynch who's coming in there trying to
Once you got that out, run game going, it opens up everything else for that Broncos offense.
So I think we've all been talking about how does Julio Jones play against the Broncos corners, but how do the Falcons corners contain Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas as well? So I think the Broncos could surprise people on offense this weekend.
Yeah, I'm of course, you're never going to hear me pick against the Broncos. I think the Broncos win it, but I think it's going to be a lot more competitive game than maybe a lot of people think with the Falcons coming in town, because you just never know what's going to happen with that offense. You know, you could be up 2 or 3 touchdowns and all of a sudden it's tied. So yeah, that's the way the AFC West looks like this week, Eric. Anything else for you this week?
I don't think so. I think we saw a couple close games last weekend. I'm expecting to see the same thing this weekend.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate you hopping on the podcast with us, Eric, and we'll do it again next week.
Thank you, Ben. Looking forward to it.
I mean, it's like Dirk Nowitzki, Steve Nash.
One week he's a Splash Brother, the next he's Steve Nash. Stick to football, Vaughn. This is Caroline Disley with your Week 5 Sound Recap. After a convincing win in Tampa Bay, the Broncos have another tough test as one of the best offenses in the league comes to town. The Atlanta Falcons are coming off a victory over the Carolina Panthers, where Matt Ryan threw for 500 yards and Julio Jones posted a 300-yard receiving game. Certainly a tough task, but the no-fly zone says they're ready.
We lick our chops every week. You know, it's another opportunity to go out there and, you know, prove ourselves and put another performance on film. And it doesn't matter who we get week to week. You know, we want to do our best. So it doesn't matter who's coming in here.
I don't know if you can say any more about how great they are on offense and the quarterback's playing superb. So, you know, it's a big, big challenge. We've played a lot of good offenses, but this might be the best one we've played.
For the Broncos offense, there's a little bit of uncertainty. Starting quarterback Trevor Siemian left the game against the Buccaneers with a shoulder injury, but Paxton Lynch came in relief and finished 14 of 24 for 170 yards with one touchdown. Coach Kubiak says that Trevor is the starter, but will he be healthy enough to go Sunday? The offense says it doesn't matter.
Trevor's our starting quarterback, and you know, hopefully he's going to be okay.
So, just taking it one day at a time.
We're confident, you know, in Paxton and Austin, and you know, if Trev's ready to go, he's going to be ready to go. But we're confident with anybody we got back there. It takes 10 guys to make his job easier, and we have to do our job.
So we'll have to wait until Sunday, most likely, to see if Trevor Siemian will be good to go. But regardless, it seems like the Broncos are ready to beat the Falcons. For this week's Sound Recap, I'm Caroline Disley.
And welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast, or as we like to call it around here, horsing around. Ben Hunt with Chris Harry talking a little bit of fantasy football. Chris, great to have you back.
You too, buddy. How you doing, man?
We're doing great here in Denver. How's it out there on the West Coast?
Not too bad. Excited for another week five, a really big matchup there in Denver on Sunday.
Yeah, it should be an exciting game between the Falcons and the Broncos here in Denver. But what we're here to talk about is a little fantasy football, so let's get right into it. What do you say?
Let's do it, buddy.
All right. So, you know, teams come out of week four. The bye weeks have started. Now we're into week five. So far, early in the week, what are you seeing as far as a waiver wire pickup here or there to help me out?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, we talked about last week how there was two teams on a bye. There's four teams on a bye this week. So, four or five, actually. So, you know, two people that stick out specifically, Zach Ertz. You know, he had a good rapport with Carson Wentz in week one, got hurt. Eagles were on a bye. If there's a chance you could pick up Zach Ertz this week, I'd do it. They played the Lions. Already the Lions have given up six touchdowns to tight ends. So, you know, that's something that if you need a streamer or maybe a tight end for the long term and Zach Ertz was on the waiver wire, I would certainly think about scooping him up. And then another guy, maybe not specifically this week, but for the long term, Ben, Kenneth Dixon. He's the rookie running back for the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens have a pretty good matchup this week against a Redskins run defense that was gashed last week by Isaiah Crowell. I can see Terrence West having a good game this week, but I think Dixon's going to be sprinkled in there as well, and he may be the better runner when it's all said and done. So those are the two guys that I would look at in the waiver wire this week, Zach Ertz and Kenneth Dixon.
One thing I like to do, Chris, is look at the movement of players getting picked up during a particular week. And what I want to do just you know, throw some quick names at you real quick and give me your thoughts on them for week five. One of the most picked up players right now, DeAndre Washington from Oakland, getting picked up big on the waiver wire. What do you see for him?
Yeah, Washington, you know, he's going to split carries if Latavius Murray doesn't go on Sunday. But, you know, I still like him as a flex. You know, I think him and Richard are going to split carries, but I think Washington may get a little bit more action. Again, that Oakland offense has looked pretty impressive. Through 4 weeks led by David Carr. I could see him as a flex player this week with a little bit of upside.
Another one, Hunter Henry, tight end. We know Antonio Gates is still questionable. I'm guessing that's why people are picking him up. But do you like Hunter Henry?
Oh, I love Hunter Henry. And that's the thing, Ben. If Gates doesn't go, He's another, top 5 to 10 tight end this week against an Oakland secondary that's been exposed thus far through the first 4 weeks. But if Gates plays, that's where it gets a little bit of a gray area there. You don't know how the snaps are going to be distributed. But Hunter Henry is somebody that I would certainly have on my bench and ready to go for week five should he be getting all the reps against the Raiders.
Sticking at the tight end position, Tampa Bay's Cameron Brate is out there getting picked up. Thoughts there?
Brate, what's tricky about that, Ben, is it's a Monday night play, right? And they're playing the Panthers, the weather conditions. The Monday night play with Cameron Brate, I'd be a little bit hesitant. I think there's probably some other potential guys that you could pick up. I mentioned Ertz. Hunter Henry is another one. Again, a lot of the Gronk owners have been disappointed. Tom Brady comes back this week. Some of these guys that have been hurt, like Delanie Walker, he may play this week. So I think you have some other options other than Brate, but, it's not an awful option if you're kind of struggling here in week five.
Last one I got for you here, former Bronco, current Bear, Eddie Royal, currently questionable, but he had a big game last week, and a lot of people seem to be liking what he can bring from either a wide receiver three or a flex position.
Yeah, former Bronco, and Brian Hoyer has had great rapport with him, and I think that's the key. Brian Hoyer, should he continue to keep this job, you look for these kind of trends and who's targeting who. Obviously, monitor Royal's injury situation, but he's been a favorite of Hoyer's, and I could see you plugging him in as a wide receiver 3/flex against a vulnerable Colts defense. So, yeah, definitely keep an eye on that questionable status, though, because you don't want to put him in if he's not 100%.
Well, Chris, it sounds like some pretty good information there for us to get week five rolling.
Yes, sir.
Just a last thing for you before I let you go here. What Broncos do you like maybe for a pick to click here coming into the game against the Falcons?
Well, I think regardless of who plays quarterback, Ben, Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas are clearly on a roll. You've seen what they've done the last 2 weeks. Emmanuel Sanders caught a touchdown pass from Paxton Lynch last week. So I really like those guys against the Atlanta Falcons' 31st-ranked secondary. And then when it comes to Julio Jones versus that Denver defense, I think it's strength versus strength. You're going to start both the Broncos defense and Julio Jones. I thought what was interesting is, the Broncos are only allowing 169.5 yards per game against the pass. Julio Jones had 170 yards at halftime of the Carolina game. So I think that's really the matchup of week five, man. I'm really excited to see that strength versus strength. And again, from a fantasy perspective, you're keeping C.J. Anderson in. You're keeping all your receivers in. Lynch or Simeon, maybe a streaming play. Daily fantasy could be intriguing. And then that Denver defense, you're always going to have that in your lineup.
Well, probably not too much of a surprise for you. I do have that Denver defense, and they have served me well for the past two seasons. So I'd like to see that continue.
Absolutely.
Well, that is Chris Harry. Thank you for your time, Chris, and look forward to having you again here on the podcast with us.
Thanks for having me, bud. Appreciate it.
Time now for the best segment of the DenverBroncos.com podcast.
Cancel Christmas!
That's right. Broncos TV in the building.
Yes.
Phil Milani here with Matt Boyer, and it's time to talk playoffs.
Playoffs. You've got four different formats that we're going to talk playoffs for. We got the NFL.
Playoffs?
We got the NHL. We got MLB and the NBA.
Four professional.
Right.
We're only talking professional.
No. Yeah, right. College basketball is hard to compete with. I think everybody would agree that is one of the best playoff formats. That's the gold standard, right?
Best professional playoffs.
Right. So we're going to talk pros, right? So we've gone back and forth here. There is some agreement. There's some disagreement. But, we start off ranking the top playoffs in pro sports with the NHL, right?
No.
No?
You're not going to take the
NHL?
Say, look, I love the NHL playoffs, especially overtime.
Okay.
Nothing is better than overtime.
Sudden
hockey.
Death overtime.
Overtime is sudden death.
Right. Except
the whole
sorry.
Thing's sudden death in hockey. Okay. So I love playoff overtime hockey. That's the best. But overall, the NFL has the best playoffs, hands down.
Why?
The wild card games are so good. Every week is so good. The divisional round, something always crazy happens. And the championship game, the Super Bowl, is the most watched televised event in the entire world.
Well, it's not more. World Cup beats it just slightly. Okay. But that's what's
at least in America.
Okay, fine. But I think that I you're right, first of all. I think that the NFL has a great playoff format. However, when it comes down to Game 7, okay, overtime, playoff hockey, you can't beat that. Well, it's win or go home. It is the most high-stakes event in all of sports because you've already played six games up to that point.
That's the one thing the NFL does not have is the hatred that develops over the course of a seven-game series.
Right.
By the time Game 7 rolls around, you hate the other team.
Right, and the thing that I think those playoff series breed, as you said, are rivalries. You think about the Avs and the Red Wings back in the 90s.
Yes.
The Avs had it a couple years ago with the Minnesota Wild. That seven-game series really started something as far as a hockey rivalry, a new hockey rivalry that didn't have a lot of history. So now, I think that those series, like we just mentioned, really breed a lot of fan hatred between each other.
Agreed. But the thing that happens in football is that, say, you lose to a team in the playoffs.
Okay.
The next year when you see that team again, that's when you hate that team. You know? Like, I know that for Broncos fans, when they see the Ravens, there's some hatred there.
Not as
when
much.
When they play the Seahawks,
well, that's there's some that hatred was a, there. That was a Super Bowl.
Yeah, see, but that
was a Super Bowl.
It doesn't breed over the course of just a series. It's like, all right, we lost this one, but we'll see you next year.
I think that's true. I think the stakes raises that, though, right? I think Broncos fans would be in agreement that they dislike the Seahawks fans more than the Ravens fans just because of when that game was played.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that that's where the rivalry is born. And the reason that we're talking about this is, of course, because Major League Baseball, their playoffs started this year. Baseball has tremendous playoffs because the playoffs compared to a regular season, night and day.
Right. Well, they also have the best of both worlds, right? The wild card game gives you that sort of winner-go-home, one-game, winner-take-all mentality that gets you into that playoff series where we just mentioned you can get into the longer series, the longer rivalries, more hatred. So all of that stuff combined just makes it one of the best setups. You get all the flavors from all the different areas.
Nothing is more like, only like overtime hockey in the playoffs is like baseball when you got a guy on second, you got a guy on third, there's one run, you know, games late with the pitch. Any pitch could change the whole game. Nothing really beats that.
No. Kirk Gibson, you think about the iconic moments in baseball. Kirk Gibson, you think about Craig Counsell,
legendary moments.
Luis Gonzalez. Right. I think there's
Matt Holliday. Oh yeah, come on.
Oh boy. That wasn't in a World Series though. That was painfully close to a World Series. Right.
To get into the playoffs.
But, like I said, I think that the Major League Baseball has really figured something out with you know, combining two of the best formats. I think the NFL, like you said, has a great format. I think the MLB, though, does a great job of combining everything together.
The one thing about the NBA playoffs is that the first round, it's garbage.
Right. Needs to be shorter.
But the second and third rounds and then the finals,
yes,
that's really good to watch, too. Love that.
When you wipe the floor with a team, a 1-8, and you don't – I mean, for every Golden State, Dallas, you know, 1-8 upset, there are
Nuggets.
Right.
Sonics.
Nuggets, Sonics. But that was only five games. That was only five games.
So that's all right.
I think for every one of those series, it's just – you just – the odds for that five-game series for the underdog much greater for them to spring an upset.
But last year, Golden State versus Cleveland, that was each game was must-watch TV.
Right. I think the finals.
So good.
Right. You need a good matchup, though. If you don't get a good matchup like that, it can be very difficult to watch.
All right. Let's get on to the AFC West picks. Just one game this week because the Chiefs have the bye.
Right.
So we're talking about the Chargers heading up north, staying in the state, facing the Oakland Raiders.
I think that this game is going to tell me a lot about how the Chargers kind of view their season going ahead. They just lost Jason Verrett. They've lost Keenan Allen, Danny Woodhead. There are so many knee injuries coming out of San Diego right now. It's sad, number one, and it's also unbelievable because you think about how many knee injuries a team has throughout the course
never
of the season.
Never seen something like this. Never
it's,
seen something
it's
like
unprecedented.
This.
So
and we know Mike McCoy. We know that he's a great coach. He's a great guy. We love to see Mike McCoy succeed. Maybe not within the division, but we want to see him do well.
Right. And that's what makes this call so hard because, you know, it's going to say a lot about how their season goes. Mike McCoy has already been talked about as being possibly on the hot seat. As you said, we don't want to see that happen to him. However, I do think that the Raiders defense showed up last weekend. I think that they showed up in a big way on the road in Tennessee. I think that they're going to come away with a win. I think they defend home field. Michael Crabtree had a huge game last weekend. I think him and Derek Carr are hitting their rhythm. I like the Raiders in that matchup.
Yeah, I like the Raiders too. Because the way that the Chargers collapsed last week against New Orleans, that's tough. That kind of a loss can really linger into the next week.
Right.
I think that Oakland is playing well. They've won a lot of games on the road. They've won a lot of really close games too. So maybe see what happens here when they go back home.
Quick question though. I know we don't have another game to get to, but who do you like as far as the I know the Broncos have entrenched themselves at the top division. Who is the biggest threat right now to that first spot between the Chiefs, Raiders, and Chargers?
So far through just a quarter of the
Four
season,
weeks, right?
Gotta like the Raiders is the biggest challenge.
Yeah, I agree. Think.
Just because they've won a lot of road games, like I mentioned, so they got some home games coming up, and whenever you have Derek Carr and that kind of offense, I think you're going to be in a lot of games.
I think the Chiefs have also played kind of they've been kind of a Jekyll and Hyde team. They've looked great against the Jets, but then they don't look great
the
against the Texans.
Game?
Right, yeah,
oh,
and then the
gosh.
Steelers game.
Yeah,
I mean,
that was a
terrible.
Tough one
right,
for
so
them.
I think nobody has really established themselves as the biggest threat just yet. We've got, you know, a couple games, or even the Raiders, that Saints game, you know, was very, very close. So I think that like you said, Raiders definitely, you know, on the come up. We'll see what happens with the Chiefs. The Chiefs, though, last year, if you remember, they just strung up 13,
they'll
11,
be there.
I think it was 11 straight wins to end
Something
the regular
like
season.
Something like that, yeah. It was awfully impressive. And they say these division games count twice. The Broncos have their first division game coming up next Thursday with a quick turnaround and on the road. So we'll see how things play out next week. But I think that's going to wrap up the best segment
by far.
The Denver Broncos.
By far, it's
not
even
segment.
Close, is it?
That's right. Matt Boyer, Phil Maloney in the house. We out!
Get off my lawn!
All right, welcome back to the DenverBroncos.com podcast. Our special guest this week is John Lynch. We'll be entering the Ring of Fame in a couple weeks' time. How have you been preparing yourself, preparing your family for the induction ceremony?
Well, really, just like when I played, my wife kind of helps me out a whole lot, and I got good people around me that help me kind of do that so I can focus on my job. And I'm certainly aware that it's coming, and I've been thoroughly excited. I mean, in 3 weeks I'll have that and the one in Tampa and going to London in between to call a game. So it's going to be a busy 3 weeks. My kids are excited. My family's excited. And both teams have just been incredible in terms of making sure that everyone's going to be here, and I can't wait.
What's it been like since you got the news of trying to organize both Ring of Fame inductions? And
well, I've got a big family, so that's been biggest thing. You know, we've got, you know, I have two siblings, but my wife's side, a bunch of brother-in-laws, and but it is fun. They all want to be there, and so it's great, and I feel humbled and honored that my family wants to be here. I got so many friends here in Denver and still in Tampa, so I think the thing I'm looking most forward to is seeing my old teammates. A lot of them are coming back for it, and that's always special because you don't get that many opportunities to get together with them.
When you look at the Broncos defense as it is now, are you kind of reminded of the ones that you played on?
I'm jealous, first of all, because they look like they're having so much fun playing, and you know, I know for guys like T.J. Ward and Darian Stewart, that they feel very blessed because I played it with a group in Tampa that got after the opposing quarterback, and it makes your job a lot easier and a lot more fun. You can take more chances because you know the rush is going to get there. And so I just know how much fun these guys are having. It's fun to come to work every day when you're that good. And I also know that, like, on a weekend like this, these are the type of matchups when you're the best and you think you're the best, you want to play the best. And that's exactly what they're getting right now at this point of the season with the Atlanta Falcons. So they're coveting the fact that they get a chance to play in this matchup, and I can't wait to watch it.
It's certainly no rest for the weary. One of the challenges they've talked about throughout the offseason, throughout this season, is rebounding from a year as the top defense as an even better defense. When you were with Tampa and you all had – course, the great defense there. How did you try to attack that and become better than was one of the best defenses of all time?
Well, they're doing a better job. I mean, I think one thing that we did in Tampa, you know, is we had done it for a long, long time. They kind of arrived last year. And so I think they understand to be considered, you got to have some longevity. But the year after the Super Bowl, we didn't handle it really well. We started out like gangbusters, but then we got some key guys hurt. I hurt my neck. Warren Sapp got hurt. And we were an older crew, though. I think these guys are younger, and we were a bunch of veteran players that were really, you know, peaking. They're young guys that I think are just scratching the surface, and they got young stars that are locked up. So I don't think this defense is going anywhere. And John's done such a great job, as John Elway, of keeping the core together and, you know, really foresee that moving forward.
One last question here for you. With the Ring of Fame coming up, I want to touch back on this. Is what kind of place does Denver hold in your heart?
Very special. You know, it's where we lived. We still keep a home here. You know, we lived here for 11 years, and it was a place that took me in when a lot of people thought my best football was behind me. You know, I was in year 11, and I had a coming off a neck injury. A lot of people, there were other teams that were interested, but Denver just felt right at the time, and it was the right move. We've done so many things with our foundation here, our family, my kids were basically raised here, so it will always hold a special place in our heart. We'll probably return and live here at some point once our kids get out of high school, and we love it.
Well, thanks for coming on the podcast, John. Hope you have a good time this weekend here.
Thanks a lot.